This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 1st of September 2009, and joining me today is Nigel Farage, member of the European Parliament for Southeast England and leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party. He has been a tireless campaigner against the EU's attempts to undermine the UK's national sovereignty ever since co-founding the UKIP in 1993, and is co-leader of the multinational Eurosceptic coalition Europe of Freedom and Democracy. Mr. Farage, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Not at all.
Well, as we sit on the verge of Ireland's historical second vote on the Lisbon Treaty, and as we see the very real possibility of the creation of a European federal superstate, perhaps you could shed some light on just how Europe has arrived at this juncture and why you have been so passionately dedicated to stopping this consolidation of power in Brussels.
Well, I mean, like many things in life, and communism perhaps being the best example, these things start with good intentions. And the idea was that Europe, the continent, had been ravaged by two world wars with the loss of tens of millions of lives, and that the idea was that if people were put more closely together, that it would prevent a repetition of that. So, okay, let's, you know, give them 10 out of 10 for having a good idea. However, the peoples of Europe accepted European cooperation, but what they never understood is they were actually being signed up to something that the architects of it never dared talk about. And that was the creation not of something where we trade together, where we're friends together, where we're good neighbors together, but actually the creation of a state. And it is, I think, the sheer dishonesty with which this has been done that first drew me from business to get involved with politics. And we're now in a situation where even when the voters in countries reject the entire concept, the European Union and the political class in those member state countries contrived to ignore those votes and to continue. And we've had, over the last few years, a constitution. The French said no, the Dutch said no, they relabeled it and rebranded it, and the Irish said no, and now they're making the Irish vote again. So, I mean, now I would argue that the European Union itself has become the very nationalistic and extreme organization that it purported to stop in the first place.
Well, certainly it speaks volumes that the European Constitution was stopped in its tracks when the French and the Dutch were actually allowed to have a say on it, and that the thinly disguised Constitution, now the Treaty of Lisbon, was halted after the Irish rejected it in the only democratic referendum that the treaty faced. So how does the British government justify not giving the people of the UK a referendum on this historical treaty?
They stick to the line, just as the French government does, and just as the Dutch government do. They stick to the line that the Lisbon Treaty is different to the EU Constitution. Well, in fact, in terms of content, it is virtually the same. There is not a single power that was proposed for the European Union in the Constitution that has been removed for this so-called Treaty of Lisbon. It is just being done with the most incredible dishonesty and deceit. And is it any wonder that we're now living in a time in Europe, right across Europe, where the disenchantment that voters feel with their traditional mainstream parties has never been greater? And I would argue that the reason that the UK Independence Party, known as UKIP, the reason that we came second in a national election on the 4th of June, namely the European elections, was really a symptom of that growing distrust of traditional career politicians.
Well, you have called the UKIP the real voice of opposition in the UK and the centre ground of British public opinion, and certainly the polls show that the public is deeply unhappy with the way their national sovereignty is being eroded by the EU. So why do you think this deep-seated displeasure is so often dismissed by the government, the parliament, and much of the mainstream media?
Because it's what they want, above all. I mean, most people in the professional political class, and I use that term advisedly because they're people who go straight from university into politics and have no experience of life outside of it. For most people in that position, the European Union has been a wonderful thing. You know, if you happen to lose your seat in a national parliament election, well, don't worry, the boys in Brussels will always find you a job. It's been like the most fantastic safety net for politicians. And cynically, they believe in it. And it's also the other phenomenon in politics. It was Milton Friedman that talked about the tyranny of the status quo. And the fact is, you know, we are in this thing now. And so people take a view, well, we'll just jolly well have to get along with it. And they con many members of the public into voting for their parties by promising them that they're going to reform it, that they're going to change it, even though the reality is they've got no chance of doing so.
Well, I think, as you say, a lot of the public is being conned into this, but at the same time, I think a lot of people are seeing through that propaganda, and this is obviously an issue that affects people all across Europe, and indeed citizens around the world who are wary of the centralization of powers in the hands of elite bureaucrats and power brokers. So how do you think citizens outside of Ireland who are interested in this issue can best help to bring awareness to the issues raised by this treaty in a meaningful way?
It's very difficult. I mean, I'm one of the few people in a position where I can do something because I have a group in the European Parliament and we have a budget and we're able to put information out in Ireland. But for most people, all they can really do, most ordinary voters across Europe, and remember the Irish aren't just voting for their own democracy, they're voting for democracy on behalf of all of us. Realistically, all that most people can do is to stand on the sidelines as observers. And that is deeply, deeply frustrating to people, but I'm afraid that's the reality.
Well, you do a good job of putting this into perspective, because indeed this is a world historical moment, and this treaty is of such importance. And of course, a lot of this now does rest on the shoulders of the Irish people. So if you had a moment to address the Irish voters who are going to have a chance to reject this Lisbon Treaty, what would you say to them?
I'd say to them, please, please do not believe what your politicians are telling you. They are telling you that they, as a result of your first no referendum, they have now won some specific guarantees from the European Union that will exempt them from being part of a European army, that will preserve their own laws on abortion and euthanasia, and that will maintain their tax system. Don't believe them. These guarantees are not worth the paper they're written on. They're not legally enforceable in any other way. You are being bullied. It is an affront to democracy that the first time you voted it wasn't listened to. And you can send a message, not just to your politicians, but to politicians across the entire continent, that they're headed in the wrong direction, that they need to take heed of what you, the ordinary people, think, and that if they don't, their days are numbered.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Farage, tell us how people can find out more about yourself and your party if they're interested in supporting you.
Well, just have a look at ukip.org, look at the website, and you'll see masses of video footage, and you'll see lots of policy ideas, and you'll see lots of stories about the European Union. And I would just say this to people, you know, with or without a Lisbon Treaty that many of you may not know much about, just think of this. We're now in a position in the United Kingdom where 75% of the new laws that are made every year are not made by the men or women that we vote for and send to the Westminster Parliament. They're made by the institutions of the European Union. But for the privilege of that, we have to pay a membership fee of £40 million a day to an organisation whose accounts have not been signed off by the auditors for the last 14 years in a row, and that all that those that went before us had to fight and defend through two world wars, namely our ability to govern ourselves in our own nation and to trade freely and make our own associations across the world, all of that is being thrown out with the bathwater as if it doesn't matter. And the reason that I'm in politics and the reason that UKIP is now on the rise is that I think the scales are beginning to fall from people's eyes, they're beginning to realize they've been lied to, and they're beginning to say to themselves, let's do something, let's make sure that our children and grandchildren can grow up in a country that they can call their own.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly that the scales are falling off the eyes and that people are waking up in mass. So I certainly hope they will go to find out more about UKIP from your website. And Mr. Farage, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you very much indeed.